Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Jerome Corsi. Dr. Corsi had graduated, got his PhD from Harvard in political science. He's the chief writer, a senior staff writer for WorldNet Daily. Does a wonderful job. And if you don't read his regular articles, why, you're really missing an awful lot. He's written a lot of books, and we carry several of them, Abomination, and there's certainly other books about the things that are going on today. Why Israel Can't Wait was one of his most recent one, and then he's written a novel. What's the name of the novel, Jerry?
It's called The Shroud Codex.
The Shroud Codex.
On the Shroud of Turin.
Right, and I just haven't had a chance to read it yet. I've got it sitting out there at the top of the next to read books. But I wondered this evening if you'd feel comfortable talking about the next bubble that's coming, which most people don't even know about. That's the derivative market, which is already beginning to implode and having a profound impact on at least a few communities so far. Well, would that be a subject you'd feel comfortable talking about?
It sounds great. I've been writing about that. And the derivative market, Dr. Stan, which most people don't understand, in fact, most professionals don't understand, it involves some very complicated bets that financial institutions make with one another. For instance, credit default swaps, betting on whether or not certain credits will default, or interest rate swaps, changing a variable stream of interest rate payments versus a fixed rate of interest rate payments. They're very complicated instruments. But it turns out there's $600
trillion. $600 trillion of derivatives out there. And but why would any communities, why would cities get in derivatives or, really anybody, unless they were really professional traders? I mean, most people don't understand them. The average city or city management wouldn't understand what this is about.
Well, I've been writing about in WorldNet Daily that, and just take some cities, for example, Saint-Étienne, which is a 800-year-old town in France. They just defaulted on $1.6 million in a contract on derivatives owned to Deutsche Bank. Now, the city was involved in a complex currency swap arrangement, which they engaged in with Deutsche Bank to try to reduce the cost of borrowing. And they were only borrowing about $30 million. But to cancel all 10 of the derivative contracts Saint-Étienne held would cost the town approximately $135 million, more than six times the amount initially borrowed. It's largely because when these contracts go on the losing side, nobody wants to purchase them, and the outstanding obligation on a derivative can be many multiples of the original entity you're trying to protect against, in this case, $30 million of borrowing.
Well, but the problem is that the average city, the average, even many investors really don't understand these.
Correct.
Don't understand what's going to happen. And suddenly, I mean, it's sort of like, getting, into a poker game with a professional poker player or certainly a loan shark. And, I mean, you don't stand a chance in something like that. How will this community, this French community, ever pay off all this money that it owes?
They never will. They'll default.
And, of course, this is the problem that we're facing. We're talking about, $600 trillion. We've heard about the stock market bubble. We've heard about the housing bubble. But nobody wants to talk about the derivative bubble. And this is coming due very soon. Well, basically, this is just beginning to unravel at the present time. The derivatives are just beginning to raise their ugly head, aren't they?
That's right, Dr. Sand. They're just beginning to. I mean, I've also been writing about Harvard University, another example that helps people understand how difficult these derivatives can be. And this involves Larry Summers, who was formerly the president of Harvard and now is on President Obama's economic team, one of the top advisors. Well, it turns out that Larry Summers has cost Harvard University billions of dollars by betting on derivatives. Harvard's endowment peaked at $36.9 billion in June 2008. It's lost some 30% of its value. It's dipped to a current about $26 billion. And some of the, just to give you an idea of how disastrous these derivatives can be, in October 2009, the end of last year, Harvard paid out almost a half a billion dollars to investment banks to get out from the $1.1 billion interest rate swaps that Harvard had entered into that were intended to hedge against variable rate debt for capital projects. Now, that's a lot to understand, but what Harvard was trying to do is Harvard was trying to expand a new science center into Alston, which is a blue-collar community adjoining Cambridge in Massachusetts. And Harvard had to borrow money to develop this project, so Larry Summers said, look, we'll engage in these interest rate swaps that will reduce our cost of borrowing. But in the process, almost a half a billion dollars was lost on these interest rate swaps because the deals went bad. And what's amounting to the biggest loss for the endowment in 40 years, the Harvard University had to agree to pay another $425 million over the next 30 or 40 years to offset almost another three-quarters of a billion dollars in credit swap deals gone bad. So you've got several billion dollars here of failed derivatives that Harvard is now on the hook for. And as a process, Harvard is just not going to be able to develop this science project in Alston. They've had to put it on hold. And the endowment's taken tremendous hits, not only in losses in the stock market, but also compounded by derivative losses.
And, of course, really what's a little scary is that the man who really got Harvard into this mess is now head of the Council of Economic Advisors advising President Obama. I wonder if he can do as well for America as he did for Harvard. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, he was just talking about Harvard. Now, certainly Harvard we put right up there on a pedestal. They were really the smartest people in the world, and the president of Harvard was a man named Larry Summers. Today, Larry Summers is the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors, the chief economic advisors in the Obama administration. But when Larry Summers was there as president of Harvard, he somehow talked them into saving money. Here's going to save money, going to have to borrow some money, develop a science project and network there somewhere in Austin, Texas, and they had to get money for it. They had to borrow the money, but to protect yourself so you could borrow the money at a lower rate, they took out these complicated derivative contracts. Well, unfortunately, the contracts turned against them, and it sounds like they've lost hundreds of millions of dollars, which they could ill afford to lose in these derivative contracts. And how much do you think this is going to end up costing? Do we have any idea?
There's no idea. This is part of the problem, Dr. Sam. When these derivatives go bad, they can have obligations that are way beyond what the stated value of the contract is. So in other words, you may have a credit swap deal that you think is limited in risk, but it costs you hundreds of millions of dollars to get out of the contract because you're taking losses, and the losses have to be paid. Both AIG and Bear Stearns, a major part of their failures in the last couple of years has been derivative losses. AIG did not lose on insurance contracts. It lost on derivatives. And just to explain derivatives again, it's very tough to get the idea of what derivatives are because they're usually these contracts that are made by professional money market, money managers. For instance, let's say you've got a loan and you want to hedge its risk, you want to reduce its cost. You might engage in a currency swap where you're betting currency movements on a derivative contract. Derivatives mean that you don't necessarily even hold the currencies. You're just making a bet on the way the currencies are going to move on some notational amount of the currencies, maybe hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. And if you bet wrong, there's a cost to that because you've got to pay up to the other side that has won on the deal. Many of the fund managers, cities, towns, pension funds, just a whole set of players that could range from universities to cities to states in the United States who have been talked into these derivative contracts by Wall Street are holding obligations they don't understand. And when interest rates begin to rise, I think we're going to see more defaults in the derivative markets that is going to cause the bursting of this $600 trillion almost, you know, 6/10, which is just an enormous amount, about 3/5 of a quadrillion dollars. That's how much exists in derivatives today worldwide.
Well, I think people can only put this into perspective. The entire gross domestic product of the United States is $14 trillion. The entire domestic product of the whole world is $60 trillion. And here you've got $600 trillion sitting there in derivatives just waiting to explode and take down the whole economic system. That is the grandfather, the greatest bubble of all, and one that most people aren't even talking about, and yet it's there. And when we begin to see countries beginning to default on their sovereign debt, and when this whole house of cards comes coming down, why, the derivatives will be right on top of them.
Well, this is the problem, and on Wall Street, financial professionals call derivatives what they call dark liquidity, which means essentially there's billions of dollars changing hands privately, largely between financial institutions, without any public record, no regulation of derivatives on stock exchanges where the transactions are subject to public and regulatory scrutiny. These bets that fund managers or professional money managers make on derivatives are made completely off of the exchanges and without any subject to regulation. That's one of the problems. So there's no real way to know how much risk is here or who's holding the risk, because the Wall Street gurus go out and they sell derivatives to foundations, towns. I belong to the Metropolitan Club in New York. The Metropolitan Club, I think, has lost $250,000 on derivatives. A sleepy institution like the Metropolitan Club has no business buying derivatives.
But somebody had to talk them into it. I mean, you wouldn't go out and you and I wouldn't go out and buy derivative contracts unless somebody said, look, here's a way we can save your money, you know, and you're not going to have to worry about it. It'll mean that you can borrow at a much lower rate of interest.
And without explaining the risk, cities, towns, universities, clubs like the University Club, foundations, have invested in derivatives, really not understanding the risk. But what happens is, let's say you're betting on a credit default on a municipality or municipal bonds or sovereign bonds. Well, today when Greece is failing, there's derivatives written on that, and whomever is, in a sense, doing a credit swap or guaranteeing that Greece will not default, now it's got to come up with the amount of money that Greece may default on, or the amount of money that is required to make whole a certain loss situation when there is a credit default in a credit swap situation. They're very complex instruments. Currency swaps, when some financial professional is holding a position in a particular currency, and they want to hedge that against a movement in the currency. And what they do is they engage in a swap with another currency, and they have no idea the risk that they're ultimately taking. If the credit swap goes the other way, the losses can be huge.
And, of course, this is what Warren Buffett referred to as the financial weapons of mass destruction. You know, currently latent but potentially lethal, and we are moving into that lethal phase. This is the thing. Everybody says things are getting so much better. We still got $600 trillion of derivatives overhanging the financial markets, and when those things come tumbling down and nobody knows who has them, certainly I don't think the government's going to do anything. They're all posturing there. We see day after day on television the political theater as they try to give us the feeling that these people are really standing up to Wall Street, and basically they're all getting contributions from them. It's all political theater for the benefit of the people watching, so people won't understand who really owns those congressmen and senators.
Well, Dr. Chan, this is part of the problem. We've seen it played out with Goldman Sachs coming before Congress and just today. It's going to be a continuing theater. And when Goldman Sachs tries to explain to Congress, I mean, the mortgage-backed securities that were sold are not derivatives, but they're another form of very complex instruments that Wall Street created to expand the mortgage market. And on mortgage-backed securities, again, the mortgages packed into these securities, which included high-risk mortgages, especially as the interest rates in 2003-2004 were at 1%, and the Democrats especially were pushing to get marginal borrowers, essentially poor people, to be able to be homeowners. Mortgage structures were created that essentially, if you were breathing in a upward increasing mortgage market, you said, well, just get the mortgage. If you can't pay the mortgage, sell the house, you'll still make a gain. But when interest rates started going up in 2004-2005, and people were defaulting on these mortgages, the mortgage-backed security market crashed. That then resulted in huge losses that were not ultimately understood except by the very top professionals on Wall Street, because these mortgage-backed security tranches, a section of one of these huge mortgage-backed bonds, might be sold and have very high ratings by companies like Moody's. At Moody's, it might have a AAA rating. But yet, in reality, the mortgages that were in that tranche or in that mortgage-backed security were not investment grade. And the losses taken when interest rates started going up ended up crashing the mortgage market. But again, Wall Street was doing the bidding of the politicians, and even George W. Bush had pushed the idea of an ownership society. So when all the warning lights were being sounded that this mortgage market was getting out of control, as long as it was a up market and the rally was continuing, Wall Street let the party go on, and the name-calling is not started until now when the bubble in the mortgage market burst.
Well, I couldn't believe the head of Goldman Sachs today was saying, and he was pointing out that basically, I mean, Goldman Sachs was selling these CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, and then they were betting against them. They were selling them to people, telling them it was a great investment, and then they were betting against them. And then, of course, Mr. Paulson from one of the hedge funds, well, I don't know, half a trillion or, I don't know, a couple of hundred billion dollars of money was actually betting against these. And when, of course, he was said, isn't this immoral? The head of the Goldman Sachs, well, said, you know, these people wanted to buy risk. I mean, they wanted to buy risk. That's why we sold it to them. Nobody wants to buy risk. I mean, you want something secure. You get bond. But one of the things that really bothers me is not only these bonds that they were buying have a AAA rating, but they had derivative contracts on them. So if the contract turned against them, they couldn't lose. And yet, what happened? Why aren't the people who wrote the derivative contracts responsible for compensating these people who lost these? People who lost billions and billions of dollars. We'll be back in just a moment. And that's one of the things that really bothers me is why aren't these people collecting on the derivative contracts that they took on these bonds when they turned against them and when the value started to drop? Because these people had bought insurance policies on those bonds to be sure that they would continue to pay their regular interest rate, that if they lost the value of the bonds, why they would be compensated for it. So when you have something that's AAA rated and you got an insurance policy on it, how can you possibly lose? Unless maybe you're doing business with Goldman Sachs. But I still don't understand how they got out from underneath paying on their insurance policies.
Well, Dr. Sand, it depends on the nature of who held the bonds. In other words, a lot of the derivatives, a lot of the bonds, the mortgage-backed securities, were sold to investors who believed that they had AAA-rated paper because the mortgage companies had produced these bonds, and the rating companies like Moody's had given them AAA ratings. So the risk that was included in these bonds was not really fully appreciated, even by professional money managers. Now, they may or may not have bought a derivative to hedge against the risk in the mortgage-backed security. If they just held the mortgage-backed security, when the mortgages started to default, when interest rates went up, then the mortgage-backed securities were reduced in value, and banks were left holding hundreds of billions of dollars of worthless mortgage-backed securities. That's what caused the bubble in the mortgage market to burst. Now we're finding that the derivatives market itself, because the contracts that were sold, these complex bets, whether related to mortgage-backed securities or not, are still outstanding. And as interest rates go up again, I think you're going to see defaults in derivatives, which are going to tank universities, towns, states, a whole class of investors that should never have been in derivatives to begin with.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I'm just very much concerned that right now why there's been really a lot of people are getting sort of optimistic. A lot of the big electronic firms are beginning to borrow money so that they can go out shopping to buy up other firms. Certainly, some of the manufacturers are borrowing money so they can begin preparing to go back into full production. Everybody thinks that we're all through the worst part of this. We're coming out of this V-recession, and everything's going to be just hunky-dory, and now they're beginning to do exactly what they were doing before. Sydney, FHA, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac are once again writing subprime loans. In other words, they're lending money to people who really can't afford the homes, and certainly now they get a bonus from the government for buying a home, a new home, used home. And so basically, you know, we see more and more people go out and buying homes who shouldn't be buying homes. We see people borrowing money who shouldn't be borrowing money. There's no better way to get into a terrible, terrible problem than to get yourself head over heels in debt, especially if there's going to be another downward leg to this recession. What are your thoughts?
Well, we've been kind of left with globalism. The jobs are gone from the United States in manufacturing. They've gone to China, and jobs in the technical services have gone to India. The workers, this is what globalism has created over the past few years. I wrote about this in my book, America for Sale. I warned against it. Those jobs are not coming back. Workers in China who will work for 50 cents an hour and engage in manufacturing, or a dollar or two an hour and do read various kinds of medical...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Dr. Jerome Corsi. And basically, Dr. Corsi is talking about globalism. And globalism has simply shifted our jobs overseas. And people don't understand. We've intentionally shifted our manufacturing jobs to China, our technical jobs to India. We're actually bringing in illegal immigrants with H-1B visas. We're bringing in, and we're actually encouraging the illegal immigrants to come in. Why do you think everybody's so upset? Because Arizona is doing what is logical, and that is trying to keep the illegal immigrants out. And suddenly, this is racist and terrible and San Francisco is going to boycott Arizona. And people in Arizona say, look, we got to get this under control, illegal immigration. People don't understand. They want the illegal immigration. The people in Washington, D.C. have been actively encouraging illegal immigration. It's part of this whole process of globalism. As we shift our jobs overseas, it's estimated that today there may be as many as 25 million unemployed, underemployed, or certainly people who've just sort of given up looking for work, 20 to 25 million Americans who are certainly not getting a salary today, or they're getting a very low salary or working at two or three jobs just to survive. We're in real trouble, and my concern is an awful lot of people have bought the message that they're putting out by the media that things are fine and getting better. And I don't think they're getting better, because those jobs we've set overseas aren't coming back again.
And when we've lost the jobs, the Federal Reserve has been stuck with the only way the Federal Reserve can increase economic activity is by reducing interest rates to 1% or to zero. So in 2003, 2004, interest rates were held at 1%, and that was a necessary condition for getting the real estate market to bubble, because people could buy homes with cheap mortgages. They could have their monthly amount with low interest rates be reduced to buy a home they really couldn't afford. When interest rates began going up, starting in September 2004, they were back up to over 5% by May 2006. That's when the real estate market bubble burst, because, again, people on higher interest rates could not afford their monthly mortgages when they adjusted upwards. They couldn't sell the homes because the mortgage market was declining. People could not get mortgages at these higher sale values for homes. And we've done the same thing again. Now to get the stock market going, the Federal Reserve has kept interest rates at zero. Federal funds rates have been zero to 25 basis points now for well over a year. And as a result, the dollar has become a carry trade. Financial institutions, large portfolio managers, banks, and the like can borrow hundreds of millions of dollars and bet with those at zero cost of borrowing in the stock market. And when the stock market's going up, when interest rates remain low, it's a great gain. But again, as interest rates begin to rise, which they're beginning to do, Federal Reserve has stopped buying Treasury debt. Federal Reserve has stopped buying agency debt, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac paper. We stopped using the credit card, the Visa card, to pay the MasterCard bill. And to sell this debt in the open market, interest rates are going to go up. When they do, the stock market bubble will burst. And I'm saying this is going to cause not only the stock market bubble to burst, but a major crisis in derivatives.
And I think this is what nobody is taking into account at the present time. And basically, if you look and see what's happening, of course, I mean, people are beginning now to go out on a limb. They're beginning to borrow. They're beginning to invest. And people imagine that everything's going to be fine. But we haven't corrected the major problem. One of the major problems is globalism, where we've intentionally sent our jobs overseas. The other thing is that, of course, one of the things that's fueling the recovery is a massive stimulus packages that they put out. I forgot how much George Bush put out, probably $500 billion, and Obama's put out, $750 billion, $700 or $800 billion. And then the Fed is, we don't know how much money the Fed has put out. We know they put out at least $1.25 trillion buying up these mortgage securities. But some people say they may have put out as much as $10 or $12 trillion. We have no idea where that money is. But it's all this great pool of money that's out there all over the world. And certainly, if you go out, if you may be bankrupt, but if you can borrow money, you can live pretty well for a time. But the day of reckoning comes, and if you're bankrupt and you can't borrow money, one of these days when you got to pay the money that you borrowed back, then comes the day of reckoning. And then if you leverage that on top of the derivatives, why, Well, we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Jerome Corsi right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Dr. Jerome Corsi, and we're talking about the derivative market. We're talking about the derivative bubble. We're talking about what's really going on in the financial markets that nobody seems to really want to address. And the Fed is simply manufacturing money. We don't know how much they've manufactured. We know what they tell us, but we know they're also coming up with all sorts of money. Certainly, they're going to help to bail out Greece. Where's the money coming from? Mr. Bernanke will not tell anybody where the money is coming from or where the money is going. It's just all sorts of money being shoveled out there, you know, almost like the proverbial helicopter, as Mr. Bernanke once described. We can never have a recession because we have a printing press, and if we have to, we'll simply throw money out of a helicopter. It's almost like that's what they're doing today, isn't it?
Well, Dr. Stan, what we're finding is that the world is the Western European countries, the United States, are headed into a debt crisis. With interest rates this low, we've bubbled up the economies, which looks like a recovery, but it's jobless. The jobs are gone. The jobs are in China. The jobs are in India. They're not coming back. Now, running on a stock market gain, we've been also running deficits. The United States has a $1.5 trillion deficit this year in 2010, about the same amount of deficit we had last year in 2009. Now, if you want to look at the future of this, you take a look at countries like Greece. Greece has socialist governments that have established a very expanded social welfare state based on elaborate government pensions for government employees, social security, health benefits, all kinds of benefits for the Greek people on a socialist kind of entitlement basis. Now, that's fine when the economy is booming.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Jerome Corsi, and we're going to get back into discussing what's going on in Greece and certainly what's happening to countries, socialist countries, that keep spending more money than they have available. But before I go on, Jerry, would you like to get out your website, tell people how they can get hold of your books?
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. I'm a senior staff reporter for WorldNet Daily, worldnetdaily.com, and America for Sale is my latest nonfiction book. It's done extremely well, been a major book in the Tea Party movement, explaining the New World Order, the globalism, the need to reduce taxes and get back Ninth and Tenth Amendments and smaller government. And I've written a novel, my first novel, on the Shroud of Turin. It's called the Shroud Codex, C-O-D-E-X, Codex being the hidden meaning, the hidden meaning that could well be placed in the Shroud of Turin if it's the burial cloth of Jesus Christ by Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago, that we're only able now to read on the advancements of modern particle physics. And it's a fast-moving novel, a mystery story. You can get my books on bookstores everywhere. WorldNet Daily typically has signed editions at the WorldNet Daily Superstore. And also on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com on the Internet.
Okay, fine. I certainly recommend the books and Dr. Corsi's articles, but you go right ahead.
Well, as I'm pointing out here, Dr. Sand, the countries like Greece are foreshadowing where we're headed, because Greece has a social welfare state that has produced debt levels. Greece does not have the tax revenue to pay the generous social welfare entitlement benefits that the Greek government has promised the people. So as you get into the Greek deficit, which is about now 14% of its gross domestic product, and the Greek accumulated debt is about 123% of its gross domestic product. And again, these estimates continue to go up because the Greeks have underestimated their deficit this year. And we're headed there. The United States will have close to a 90% debt to gross domestic product ratio by 2020, according to the estimates from the Congressional Budget Office. So we're, even though much bigger than Greece, we're headed down the same path. Now, what's happening is that Greece needs to borrow more money to stay in operation. And the Greeks have seen their credit rating deteriorating. Moody's and the other credit rating agencies have just lowered Greece to junk bond status. This increased the cost of Greece for borrowing. They have to pay more to countries that are willing to lend them money in order to keep operating because of the risk involved. And Greece is looking to the European Union and to the International Monetary Fund for a bailout. The International Monetary Fund enters into a bailout for Greece. The International Monetary Fund is going to have very severe austerity measures, which will essentially mean that the Greek people don't get their government pensions, they don't get Social Security and its equivalent, they don't get welfare, they don't get medical care that was promised to them, and the Greeks, in response, have been rioting in the streets against the government taking away their benefits. This is essentially the demise of a social welfare state because, in the final analysis, like in the United States, we just can't pay for these benefits that are granted by the government.
Well, you know, what's just so interesting, of course, I live in California. Now, we have here in California, we are just about as close to bankrupt as you can get. I think the state budget's about 86 billion, something like that. And we're going to have, and I have various figures. Some people say we've got a $20 billion deficit. Other people say we've got a $39 billion deficit. But we know we've got about $60 billion in bonds that we don't have the money even to make the interest payments on, much less the principal. But furthermore, we've got $500 billion of pension benefits and health benefits we promised the retirees, and no way to come up with the money for that. So, I mean, is President Obama going to give us money to bail California out? And if they bail out California, are they going to bail out all the other states in the union? And if we do, if the federal government does it, where's the money coming from unless they're going to destroy the value of our currency and create runaway inflation like they did in the Weimar Republic, like they did in Zimbabwe, like they did in Argentina? You know, what's going to happen?
Well, California is a good example. I've been writing about California in my Red Alert newsletter on WorldNet Daily. California's got about almost a 50% gap between the revenue coming in and the budget. And California has had any number of measures that Governor Schwarzenegger has proposed to try to balance the budget. And they've failed to go through the legislature, or the voters have not approved it. So California is facing major reductions in school teachers, closing or prisons or release of prisoners, cutbacks in state parks. California is going through a severe reduction in state services. Now, when you look at California, California has one of the largest welfare populations in the nation. California, at the end of 2008, had only 12% of the nation's population, but it had 32% of the nation's welfare recipients. So California disproportionately is generous with regards to welfare, and that has been, and a very large proportion of that, almost one-fifth, somewhere between 16% and 20% of California's budget deficit is directly attributable to the education and health costs for illegal immigrants. Now, if California continues to have generous social welfare programs for those who are poor in California, invite the poor to stay in California, or for illegal immigrants, California is not going to be able to balance its budget, and there's going to be more severe cuts in schools, police, fire, parks, other services that the citizens of California depend on, even highways. So the quality of life in California is going to diminish as a consequence of California continues to have very high tax rates. The flight of those with money and businesses from California are going to leave the state, which is a continuing prospect of ultimately projecting bankruptcy for the states like California that refuse to reduce their social welfare programs or their benefits to illegal immigrants.
I think you're absolutely right. And people say, well, look, we just got to raise taxes. Well, you've raised taxes on the businesses. Businesses will move. Well, we'll tax the people who are wealthy. Well, you tax the people who are wealthy, they just quit making money, or they pick up and move. And certainly they'd like to increase property taxes. But if they increase property taxes, people will sell their homes and move. So basically they're in a lose-lose situation. Yet the politicians don't want to cut back on all the giveaways because that's how they get reelected. And certainly, basically, they're largely funded by the public employees unions who are organized and demanding more money and higher benefits. And they say, look, we don't care what happens to the state. We just want what we're entitled to.
Well, and now states like California are saying, well, let's tax marijuana. California thinks that they're going to have a boom in tax revenue by taxing marijuana. There's a lot of problems with this, too. I mean, not the least of which is the increase of the drug-addicted population in a state like California. But California's actually got a budget resolution now that will be voted on. And state officials like Betty Yee, who heads the California Board of Equalization, has been projecting that California could raise as much as $1.3 billion a year on tax revenues on marijuana. Now, the problem is that this has not been proven. I mean, marijuana can be grown in the backyard. And the drug cartels, which will innovate with different strains of marijuana, probably more exotic, more powerful strains of marijuana and other drugs, even when marijuana is legalized, will draw revenue away from the state. Essentially, legalizing drugs is not the same as legalizing alcohol because the production of high-quality alcohol is very difficult. It takes major beverage companies to be able to produce high-quality alcohol. It takes innovation in the backyard or importation from south of the border or exotic countries in the Middle East to get marijuana here, the United States, that is high quality and more potent and will still be sold in the black market even when California legalizes marijuana.
And, of course, basically what will happen is people will just be bootlegging it to avoid the taxes. And certainly this is a very convenient way. Certainly when you raise the taxes too high on cigarettes, why people just bootleg cigarettes? They just find a way to sell the cigarettes, and people are quite willing to buy them, and they don't have to pay the taxes. So, I mean, certainly all these ideas sound great, but in reality, they do nothing. I mean, to solve the problem, Governor Schwarzenegger's been talking about selling buildings. We've got a number of major buildings that they build at great expense. They've got a lot of money they had to borrow to build the buildings. Governor Schwarzenegger wants to sell those buildings off to get the money to balance the budget. But by the time they pay off all their mortgages, they're only going to get about $600 million. It's estimated it'll cost us $5 to $6 billion over the next 5 years to rent the buildings back because people were going to sell the buildings to, are going to rent them back with a 7% interest rate and something that, I mean, we're going to end up losing. We're going to make $600 and lose $5 billion and a lot of people wonder if maybe some of Governor Schwarzenegger's friends are the ones who are going to buy the buildings.
Well, and the problem is that in California, state eventually is going to face bankruptcy. California is the eighth largest economy in the world. And California is going the same type of process that Greece has, except California doesn't have the borrowing ability that Greece does. But Moody's will threaten to lower the credit rating of California, which will increase the borrowing cost of California. When you're facing a $24 billion deficit in California, the state has to take dramatic measures. I mean, Schwarzenegger has proposed releasing thousands of prisoners early, closing more than 200 state parks. State employees or others that expect various payments from the states have been given vouchers. The idea of closing or reducing the number of teachers in the state was going to put strain on the school system throughout the state. And when California continues to have 12% of the population of the nation, 32% of the nation's welfare recipients, California with essentially 20% of California's budget deficit attributable to illegal aliens, with free education in Spanish in the public schools and free medical care in the emergency departments of hospitals in California, the budget crisis in California has no real easy end. And there's at least 10 states facing similar crises, budget shortfalls similar to California's. By the end of 2010, I've done an analysis, there could be 47 states that are facing various states of budget crisis, including New Jersey, where I'm living. And a key element of these budget crises, just like Greece, are government pensions for employees that are just too generous.
And there's no money that's been set aside for them. This is the problem. They're supposed to put money aside to pay those pensions, or they'll be, you know, economically sound, invest that pension money in the stock market. But even if they had the money, invest in the stock market, what happens if the stock market collapses, or the bond market collapses, or they buy T-bonds, and what happens if the T-bond market collapses? And so they're actually raising the, dropping the rating on buying bonds here in California. They're no longer AAA. They've dropped it. I understand that Greece, they've dropped their credit rating to a B or triple B, something like that, costing them 8.7% to borrow money in Greece, and that's probably just before long they'll be looking at that as the good old days.
Well, Senator Boer just downgraded Greek debt today, and the problem is you've got, for states like California with downgraded debt, when you take a look at the government pensions, this is the huge item in many of these state budgets that is simply impossible to pay. You've had unions, you've had teachers' unions, the SEIU for government employees, that have just simply created early retirement with a very large portion of pay for the rest of your life, very generous health benefits and other benefits coming with retirement. And as well-intentioned as these benefits are, there's no way to pay for them. This is the crisis. And I think we're going to see, at the national level, President Obama has now created this bipartisan commission that's going to look at the United States essentially being bankrupt. We've got unsustainable levels of debt. I'm saying the world is in a debt crisis. And if we are going to have a value-added tax added to income tax instead of replacing income tax, you're going to have a major detriment on economic growth that comes as a result of that value-added tax to sustain a social welfare state that the politicians continue to increase. The Democrats have just voted the universal health care, and it, like other health programs, undoubtedly is going to be a budget drain, despite the promises the program would be budget neutral.
Well, I think anybody who believes that you can actually increase the coverage and increase the Medicaid coverage and save money has got to be incredibly naive. And certainly, when if you look and see what's happening, we are going to have, within the next 20 years, about 72 to 75 million baby boomers retiring, and they're all going to be eligible for Medicare. I mean, how are you going to fund them? How are you going to fund them with Social Security? Where's the money coming from? Both Medicare and Social Security are Ponzi schemes, and they've gone the same way as Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme. They're both bankrupt today. So where's the money coming from to fund Social Security and Medicare for the baby boomers, Jerry?
Well, we're entering, Dr. Sand, the second dip of this double-dip global recession. And I've argued this is not a recession. This is what globalism looks like. We're going to have a bursting of the interest rates are going to go up. The stock market bubble is going to burst. The debt crises in countries like Greece are going to spread to the entire EU, may collapse the euro. And in the United States, we're going to face unsustainable levels of federal deficits and growing federal debt. We cannot pay for these entitlement programs that President Obama wants to put into place.
Well, I think we're in for some very difficult times. I don't think most people really understand what's going on. Certainly the television is telling us that things are looking better. They're talking about those green shoots. And basically, you know, if you read the headlines, things are great. But if you read the article, things are nowhere as great as they appear to be. Hang on for just a minute. We'll be right back with Dr. Jerome Corsi. Well, Jerome, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, please.
Well, Dr. Sand, I think we've covered a lot of ground, but we're basically saying that the financial crisis is by no means over. From derivatives, $600 trillion of really complicated and little understood bets that are going to unravel as interest rates rise, to debt crises where states like California, governments like Greece, increasingly the United States, we cannot sustain this level of entitlement programs in a socialist, social welfare state on a European model. When I wrote America for Sale, that this is what globalism looks like. Very high unemployment, very high levels of debt, constant crises of fiscal irresponsibility in which governments cannot produce the tax revenue needed to meet the promises they've made for social welfare payments to their citizens. And as this crisis develops, I think we're going to hit the second wave of this recession, which is going to mean higher unemployment and more home foreclosures. I wish the news were better, but I think this is the reality when President Obama thinks it's okay to borrow another $1.5 trillion, and the United States has a negative net worth of now approaching probably $70 trillion.
And I think it's very interesting that the people who are in charge of the major hedge funds, there's one out there, I think it's got $100 billion in it, it's a bond fund. And what are they doing today? They're getting out of American treasury bills and, other bonds responsible to the government. In other words, they are very much afraid that the T-bills, the government is going to default on debt. And when these people who've got to be pretty smart when you're managing $100 billion in bond funds, when they're starting to abandon the treasury bills, I think everybody should be concerned, don't you?
I definitely do, Dr. Sand. I think it's time for people to take a look at America for Sale. I really recommend it. Strategies to reduce debt, get your primary residential real estate in order, because we're going to have some more extremely difficult financial times that have not been seen globally since the Great Depression in the 1930s.
Well, I'm sure you're absolutely right. I really appreciate so much your staying up with us this evening, and we'll look forward to reading your book on the Shroud, and maybe we can get you on and talk about that or some of the other issues. But thank you so very much for being with us tonight, Jerry.
Great honor and pleasure, Dr. Sand, as always.
Good night. God bless. Okay, well, that was Dr. Jerome Corsi, and I'll tell you, that's one of the best analyses of the debt situation we've heard. What a privilege to have him. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Somebody had called in and asked for his relationship between the mutual funds and derivatives, and I don't really think so, unless the mutual funds were foolish enough to buy derivative contracts. But mutual funds usually just invest in stocks and in bonds. If they've invested in derivatives, that is virtually suicidal. Somebody had called in and asked, what about the war with Iran? Will that be used to destroy the whole economic system so we can start in all over again? And that is certainly a very real possibility. You can't tell what's going to happen. When you start a war, you never know how it's going to end. But ladies and gentlemen, we are going to war with Iran. I don't know whether it's going to be a matter of months or a matter of years, but all you need to do is realize we are already at war with Iran. When you put up $400 million, you can check this on the internet, just go to your search engine, put in $400 million CIA topple Iranian government, something like that. You'll get the articles. We're putting up hundreds of millions of dollars to topple the sovereign government of Iran, which we installed back in 79. People don't remember that, but we installed that. We toppled the Shah and put the Ayatollahs in, because I believe behind everything going on today, there are powerful spiritual forces. There is a plan to take America and Israel into a war with the Muslim world, and the Muslim world into a war with the United States, and I don't know where it's going to end up, but I am very, very concerned for the future of my country and for the future of Israel and for the future of the Muslim people. We may not agree with their religion. They're God's children, and I fear that hundreds of millions of people are going to die, and you need to be out there in the front line letting people know what's coming down the line and telling them not to let us manipulate us into a war. This whole thing is being scripted. You need to get my talk on Iraq, the untold story, because it's the story of all the unnecessary wars we've been in. There's a DVD, there's a syllabus, and you need to get them. It's got the documentation so that you can discuss this intelligently. We are going to war with Iran unless the sanctions were to topple the government, and I think there's very little chance of that. I think our leaders want a war. What a wonderful way to solve their economic problems. We just impoverish the American people, and then they'll look to government to control them. Plead for the government to take care of things so that we will no longer have the chaos and the breakdown of society that we are about to witness. These things are coming down the line. You need to hear my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness or read the book. You need to hear my talk on the planned police state and get the syllabus. You need to hear my talk on the planned population reduction and the pamphlet, the population the population control agenda that's up on the internet, or you can get that from us if you get anything else. The population control agenda is the best thing out there on how you tie this whole issue of population control into the world occult agenda, because there is an agenda out there. You need to understand there is a spiritual hierarchy out there. And if you haven't, of course, seen a little pamphlet published by the Luciferians on the working of the spiritual hierarchy, it is a treatise that was dictated. It was channeled to a woman named Alice Bailey by a demonic spirit named Joaquin. It's published by the Lucis Trust, and we'd be glad to send you a copy of that if you get anything else from us. You need, of course, to get the DVDs on the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. There are three in the set. You can get them individually. You can get them together. But you need to get them. You need to have the information available so you can talk to people about the fact that there are two forces in America. One is the Christian, but the other is the occult. But the occult forces have infiltrated our seminaries. Our ministers do not understand the nature of the spiritual battle. They will do everything they can not to address what's going on, because we're only supposed to talk about the scriptures, never supposed to show you how they are applicable today. But ladies and gentlemen, we are involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political battlefield. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.